The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Ross, Judge Larkin, Judge Klafhockey, the Honorable Kevin Ross presiding.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Court of Appeals for this Zoom session of oral arguments this October 13th, 2021. The matter is being heard electronically, but the party should be aware, even though we can see each other, the recording of the proceedings are only in audio, so please do state your name as you commence each leg of your argument so that we can keep track of who's attached to each of the arguments. If there's any technological issues along the way, just please, if you can't hear or see someone or if others are freezing up, if you'll indicate to us that that's a concern, then we can pause the proceedings and see if we can help get the technology in order. The first matter on for oral argument this morning is in the matter of the welfare of the child of LLH and CAM parents. Each side will have 15 minutes for argument with an additional 5 minutes to appellant's counsel if you choose to use it for rebuttal. We understand that there's a division of time. So we'll just note that as you go, that we'll have a 10-minute argument and a 5-minute argument, as I understand it, from appellant's counsel, since there are two appellants in the case. Please be mindful of the timing restrictions. And with that, counsel for appellant, first counsel, whichever one of you would like to proceed first, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thank you. I will be proceeding first. May it please the court, my name is Laura Schultz, and I represent the appellant father in this matter before the court. Before the court is essentially, I think, as follows. This case is about the lack of reasonable efforts provided by the social services agency, in particular with regard to culturally appropriate services, which is required in every child protection proceeding. I'd first like to address the lack of reasonable efforts in this case and then address the best interests of the child. In every child protection case, as Your Honors are aware, there are three.
Pause you just for a minute there for a big picture question. I'm not sure whether this argument attaches to mom or dad in this case, but there was a significant argument in the brief, the combined brief, that this is a case of active as opposed to reasonable efforts. And I'm just wanting to press you on that. The district court actually made a legal and factual determination that this is not an ICWA case. And am I correct that there's no argument in your brief challenging that legal or factual determination?
That's correct, Your Honor. There were, signified as three parts of this case. Initially, it was marked an active efforts case. Then when it was determined that the blood quantum of the child was only 43% instead of the required 50%, it was determined that ICWA did not apply and it was a reasonable efforts case and treated as such. Then about a year later into the case, additional tribes were notified because there was question as to whether there was other blood quantum and notices were provided to other tribes. Those tribes responded and it was again determined. So active efforts was required for another period of time for about 2 months. And then it was determined it was reasonable efforts, if that makes sense.
Well, it does make sense. But at the time of the termination, the termination is based upon reasonable efforts. And there was no requirement for active efforts to be part of the district court's analysis. And I didn't see any analysis in that regard. Am I correct about that?
You are correct about that. Reasonable efforts were required at the time that the matter proceeded to termination trial. However, even under reasonable efforts, the agency is required to provide culturally appropriate services, even though the child is not marked an ICWA.
No, I understand that. But your brief takes a significant portion of the argument to assert that the district court erred by not making findings about active efforts. Do you withdraw that argument?
I don't know that the court needed to make specific findings, but I would note that portions of the case were active efforts were required. And at that time, when the court issued its orders during the active efforts portion of the case, the court would have been required to make an active efforts finding at that time.
But just so I'm clear, we're here on a termination decision. And are you conceding or not conceding that our analysis only regards reasonable efforts, not active efforts?
Your analysis only regards reasonable efforts at the time of termination.
All right, thank you.
As I was indicating, in every case, the court is required to make findings with regard to whether there is a statutory basis, whether the agency provided reasonable efforts, unless they've been relieved of those requirements, which they were not in this case, and the best interests of the child. With regard to reasonable efforts, I believe that the agency, the social worker, admitted and testified at the trial that they did not provide culturally appropriate services to the child, that they failed in keeping the tribe, the St. Croix Chippewa tribe, apprised of the child protection proceedings, that they didn't reach out to them to provide culturally appropriate services in this case, and that it wasn't until the very end of the case that father reached out to the tribe and that the tribe became involved again, that father became engaged and entered into a culturally appropriate treatment that he found of his own initiative at that time.
And that he dropped out of, right?
He did drop out of just prior to the commencement of trial.
So why does it matter? I mean, if you're saying that the culturally appropriate services that were provided ultimately didn't change his behavior, why does it matter whether the county or the father initiated those culturally appropriate treatment options?
Because I think the engagement of the tribe came too late in this case. As the court is aware, the issue in this case was chemical dependency, which is a struggle, a long-term struggle. It's not something that gets resolved or treated overnight. And the last-minute engagement of the tribe at the end of the case came too late. It needed to come much earlier on in the case, which it did initially, but then the agency just stopped notifying them. Elizabeth Lowe testified that she thought she didn't even know the child was still placed in Iowa, and that one of the children, which is not part of this appeal, was separated and placed near tribal land in Wisconsin. So I think had the tribe been engaged all along, that would have made a difference in this case.
And what does the record tell us about why it would have made a difference? Why would we? I assume since we know that it's father's chronic chemical use that led to the out-of-home placement, and that was not corrected at the time of the hearing. What is there in the record that would suggest a different outcome was likely or conceivable had circumstances been different and other services provided?
Because at the end of the case, for the first time, father went to an inpatient treatment setting, which was needed for him and gave him the level of support. Yes, he did leave that treatment, but I think when he had the tribal backing and support of his tribe, that mattered to him and made a difference, and he was able to go to an inpatient treatment setting.
So just so I'm clear, the treatment itself was not culturally specific. It was just the fact that it was inpatient versus outpatient?
No, it was also a culturally specific. The tribe and Elizabeth Lowe had found a culturally appropriate and specific inpatient treatment setting. He did have medical issues and leave, but I think had that continued to play out, he was working with the tribe on getting into another treatment setting.
You say he had medical issues and that's why he left. Did the district court agree that's why he left?
I don't remember if the court made a specific finding as to why he left that treatment setting. I would say that I think Elizabeth Lowe testified at length as to all of the different services that she could have provided. She could have provided the child with culturally specific courses, therapy, coordinate sibling visits, provide drug screening. There was the trail program and youth classes. Promotion of case plan success, getting father set up with a mentor through the tribe that would have initially supported him.
Can I jump in with one more question? I understand that there might have been more services provided. My question, and maybe more culturally appropriate or specific services provided, is there any indication that the services that were provided were culturally inappropriate with regard to his treatment?
Specifically with regard to his treatment?
Yes.
as to father, no, but it's not just father and his treatment that the court is required to look at. The court is required to look at services provided to the family as a whole, father, child, and preserving that cultural heritage. In this case,
is there anything in the record that suggests that if other services had been provided, that that would have led to a reunification that was in effect preempted by the not providing the services?
I think that's speculative, and that's what we don't know, because they weren't provided. Had they been provided, we don't know what the outcome would have been.
Well, is there a description of these services that would reasonably lead one to conclude that it would assist in a reunification? I mean, that's really the reason we talk about reasonable efforts, that is to complete a reunification, isn't that right?
It is, and I think what is clear from the record is that when the tribe was involved, father felt supported and felt like it mattered. Like it wasn't just the agency and some white man telling him that he couldn't be with his child. The tribe provided him that true, genuine assistance and support that he needed to make it matter and work to reunify and get the treatment that he needed. I see my time is nearly up here. I hope I've answered your questions. I would just respectfully ask that the court reverse the termination of parental rights with regard to father and remand the case for further proceedings under a CHIPS proceeding. Thank you.
Thank you. You will have time for rebuttal. I understand that you're the one taking the rebuttal. No, that's best off to go, counsel. All right.
Yes.
All right. The next appellant, counsel for next appellant, if you'll state your name and.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Kevin Wetherill, counsel for the mother, also joint appellant in this matter. First thing I wanted to address with the court was there is one distinct, different legal basis for terminating parental rights between mother and father in this case. And as to mother, the district court found her palpably unfit, as that term is defined under Minnesota statute. However, we challenge that finding because the only basis, the only facts to support the palpable unfitness finding as made by the district court are chemical dependency findings. I believe this case is squarely on point with the TR case that we cited.
Just so we're clear, the court, am I mistaken? Didn't the court also find other basis to terminate your client's parental rights?
It did indeed. It absolutely did. Yes, I don't dispute that at all.
And do you agree that if we disagree with your position as to the second two issues that were raised, that is the reasonable efforts and the best interest of the child, then the district court's determination as to palpable unfitness wouldn't matter. I'm not saying that's the way we'd come out, but do you agree that if we found that if we determined that there were in fact reasonable efforts under the statute, and that termination was in the best interest of the child, at least, or that the district court's decision was supported, then we would not have a reason to reach the palpable unfitness issue.
That's correct. I do agree. But furthermore, as to the palpable unfitness, I think the TR case is particularly instructive. Every case cited by the county attorney's office in this case to suggest that TR is not controlling, it fails for a number of reasons. Number one, every case cited on that palpable unfitness issue predates the Supreme Court's decision in TR. Number two, every one of the cases cited by the county has a reason other than just chemical dependency. Things like sexual abuse of a child, imprisonment, physical abuse of a child, violence against a partner, things that existed in addition to chemical dependency, things that don't exist here. The only thing that the county argues exists here in addition to chemical dependency is housing instability and or homelessness. And there are two cases that the county cites for that proposition. That is In re the Welfare of CK and In re the Welfare of SRA. However, in this case, the district court itself did not make a finding that there were additional reasons other than chemical dependency. In fact, the only finding in which the district court addresses housing instability or homelessness is finding number 56. And in finding number 56, the district court in fact says that the housing instability was a direct result of the chemical dependency.
Well, can I pause you for a minute? I mean, that's certainly one avenue to make the nexus connect, the nexus, draw the nexus between the activity and the child. But The statute allows for termination, if I understand the statute correctly, if there's some consistent pattern of specific conduct before the child. And so you don't necessarily have to have a drug activity that causes other problems if the drugs are being used before the child and affecting the child. So as I understand it, at least there's from the district court's record, there was testimony from the daughter that the parents consistently and dishonestly, not failing to reveal it, but were using drugs consistently in front of the children. Am I correct about that finding in the record? And if so, is that not enough to establish conduct before the child?
So I believe the testimony was not quite as specific as what you may have suggested. My recollection of the testimony was that the child believed that the parents were using drugs in a closed room behind a closed door, and that she opened the door and saw indicia of use, but I don't believe she saw specific use. And there was some back and forth during the trial testimony on that point.
Right, but wasn't this the closed door that was shared between the parents and the younger child, that the son at issue in this case?
No, it wasn't the bedroom. My recollection was the testimony was that the parents were in a bathroom with the door shut. So it wasn't the bedroom that was part of the search warrant execution prior to the start of the case. In my last couple of seconds, I did want to quickly address...
Before you conclude, I have a question that's bothering me. The county has argued that you waived a challenge to the court's determination that the child was neglected and in foster care.
They have raised that. Are you asking...
You have a response.
Sorry. I know my time's up, but I will respond briefly. We have not appealed that specific finding. You are correct. However, we have appealed on the basis of the reasonable efforts, like with all of the other bases.
Understood. Okay.
Thank you. And you will have an initial 5 minutes of time, and I understand you're the one who's going to be taking it up for the appellants.
I am. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, may it please the court. My name is Bryce Herman, Assistant Scott County Attorney, and I represent the respondent, Scott County Health and Human Services, in this matter. Today, the respondent is asking the court to affirm the decision of the trial court, that the trial court specifically addressed all of the statutory criteria necessary for termination, that those findings made were supported by substantial evidence, and that the findings are not clearly erroneous. I'd like to turn directly to the heart of this case and the issue regarding reasonable efforts as well as the cultural appropriateness of the services that were provided. In particular, I think the central issue the court needs to grapple with today is the holding that was offered in the Welfare of the Child of ASB. And I would submit that counsel has not indicated that they met their burden, that the services that were provided were culturally inappropriate. In fact, just moments ago, I heard counsel concede that as to the appellant CAM, that nothing that was provided regarding the treatment services were deemed to be culturally inappropriate. And when you look at the testimony that was provided at trial, the testimony of the appellant CAM, how he talked about how his treatments were specifically picked out to address his needs and being culturally appropriate, that they were handpicked by him. There's extensive testimony regarding the services that he received at the Native American Community Clinic. Again, significant testimony provided by the social worker, Ms. Goldman, about how closely she worked during that time with his counselor, that when he continued to test positive for controlled substances, how she would work to engage both the appellant as well as the counselor in identifying perhaps an appropriate, a higher level of care. Is frankly needed as the current option was not meeting his need.
Can you respond? I'm sorry. I want you to come back to that if you haven't fully.
No, that's okay.
Also, your idea, but I would like you to address the argument that without regard to the services provided for father, there weren't culturally appropriate services provided for the children.
Yeah, no, thank you. And that is a great question. In fact, it is true as to the testimony of the social worker, indicating that culturally specific services were not provided to the child in particular. there was the issue of whether or not this child was in need of mental health services. He did receive a diagnostic assessment that did not screen the need for any services. But when you look at the requirements under Minnesota Statute 260.012F, it talks about the agency's need to meet the needs of the child's family by providing culturally appropriate services. So we would submit that it's not just what is provided to a child, but the active, or the, excuse me, the reasonable efforts that are need to be culturally appropriate as to meeting the family's needs. Certainly, this child has a need for a safe and supportive living environment, for a caregiver that's going to be free of controlled substance use, that's going to be living an active life in recovery. And so that's why these services that were provided to the parent, the parents met the cultural needs and in fact then meets the needs of the child ultimately. And again, it gets to this issue about just because services could have been different does not mean that they were inappropriate in this case. And certainly as a result of what's occurred, we have learning lessons in the work that we do. And was there opportunities to do more? Absolutely. But was anything done inappropriate in regards to this matter? The agency would submit that it was not. And just to clarify the timeline a little bit in this case. So this case starts back in August of 2019 with a report regarding controlled substance use going on in the home. Within a week, there actually ends up being a drug raid in the home. And as a result of that, we have drugs that are found in the child's bedroom. We have paraphernalia. We have needles on the floor next to the child's toys. And at that time, the agency is working with the family to implement a safety plan. The parents ultimately make a decision to sign a voluntary, sign a delegation of parental authority to place the child with the maternal grandparents, who then, of course, later on in the brief, they're citing as that was inappropriate for the county to do so. However, we would submit that was by their request that the child was placed with the maternal grandparents. So back in August, we're talking about the need for services. We're talking about chemical dependency services. The agency is engaging the tribe at that time. The tribe is saying, yes, this is appropriate. This plan is appropriate and that no additional services are necessary. It was within approximately 3 weeks that the agency learns upon submitting the green card notifications and doing the ICWA and MIFPA inquiry that the child is not eligible, or the children are not eligible enrollment, and therefore the Indian Child Welfare Act and Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act no longer applies in this case. And so it is correct that for a period of October to December, there was an additional inquiry that was done, as the appellant CAM has additional lineage to other tribes distantly in Minnesota. And again, the court made requisite findings regarding active efforts during that time. But again, it was determined that our standard and the standard of review here today that we're discussing is that of reasonable efforts. And I want to talk a bit about the accessibility of services and why these services were important. Again, we had a child living in an environment to which there was ongoing drug usage in the home. There was exposure in the home. And within days, you know, actually the EPC was on October 28th. 2 days later, they're doing case planning meetings. They're discussing services. They're engaging in appropriate next steps at this point. And we have a course of conduct through over 17 months to which we have the appellant LLH refusing to even acknowledge the problem, right? We're doing repeated testing in finding out that she's sane, even at trial, even at the very end, when questioned directly by the court, refuses to acknowledge the existence of an issue, despite the overwhelming evidence to the contrary. And so we have this issue of after 17 months of involvement, we have the issue of what is in the best interest for this child. And the court made a finding, essentially saying that this child can no longer wait. Like, we're beyond our statutory timelines in regards to this case. And we still don't have a parent who's acknowledging a problem. And so that gets to that issue of palpable unfitness. And I'd love to discuss that at this point as it relates to mother in particular. And there was findings throughout that discussed not only the chemical dependency, but the specific condition or nature that's in chronic nation or duration being a refusal to even acknowledge a problem, let alone engage.
The palpable unfitness finding and the neglected and in foster care, which of the two do you think is stronger for termination?
Again, the agency would submit that there is substantial evidence as to both findings, Your Honor. I think the palpable unfitness argument in particular is fairly compelling because, again, we have to look at, and the question was raised about what in this record suggests that the outcome could have been any different, correct? And we have the issue of 17 months of attempts to engage in services, the testimony of Ms. Goldman in particular talking about every month I'm making phone calls, I'm sending emails, I'm writing letters, I'm doing meetings in parks. We're not even getting to the point of starting, right? We're not starting the services in this point. So if we have to look at what is the likelihood that counsel's request for a reversal in additional 6 months is going to bring about any change in this case, again, unfortunately, we have 17 months that demonstrates that we're still going to have these chronic issues in nature and duration. And again, it's not just the chemical dependency. There is the involvement with a chemically dependent partner. There is the housing and instability issues that were raised. There also was concerns regarding mother's mental health and being diagnosed with anxiety and depression and chronic pain, and specific recommendations from her neuropsychological evaluation that she needed to coordinate with service providers, that she needed to enroll in individual therapy, and she flat out refused. So again, how can we look and say prospectively that this outcome would be any different after any period of time, given the lack of engagement or willingness to engage in services? And so looking at this issue of, again, the culturally appropriateness of services, so again, could things have been done differently? The agency would submit, absolutely. But were they done inappropriately? We would say absolutely not. And as to the issue of visitation that I know hasn't been raised, and again, this impact of COVID, the agency as well would acknowledge that COVID did impact its ability to provide services. The agency readily acknowledges that there was limitations put on restrictions regarding travel, that county employees, that state employees, were not allowed to leave the state for certain periods of time. But did that impact the delivery of services or prevent services from being provided in its entirety? No, absolutely not. It's just that our world became different. Our world became different in the sense of we were doing meetings virtually. We were meeting in parks instead of in offices, but still the work was available. There also was modifications to how services were delivered. We no longer had our random urinalysis testing program for a period of time. The agency pivoted to provide the sweat patch testing. The agency specifically pivoted to address the concern of the appellant LLH that providing UAs triggered a trauma response to her. And so the agency made that request and honored that. To provide different services to meet the appellant's needs. And so, again, just because there was timelines or restrictions put on when somebody could test versus coming in at all, again, doesn't mean that reasonable efforts were not provided here. We look at the assistance that was provided, phone cards to assist with the communication issue, gas cards to assist with the transportation issue, consulting with the providers for services that were offered for the appellant CAM. Again, trying to engage for months to say, we don't think this is working, right? Like, we're struggling here at this point. We're continuing to have positive tests in regards to this matter. And so perhaps a higher level of care was needed. So again, that conversation was had, and the record is just replete with instances of Ms. Goldman trying to engage and being met with hostility at times, resistance at times, or just a genuine lack of engagement. And so ultimately, again, appellant CAM got into treatment in February, was there for a handful of days. Counsel is correct that the record does not identify the why he left or said this was because of medical issues or what it was, but just the fact he didn't complete treatment successfully, that we're 17 months into an out-of-home placement case, and we don't have any advancement on the core issue that is in this case, which is that we have a child that's been in foster care for 17 months, and we don't have any substantial either compliance or engagement on efforts towards reunification. So the agency would submit that the trial court did a careful analysis of best interests, balancing both the parent's interest in maintaining the parent-child relationship, the child's interest in maintaining the relationship, and any competing interests. And ultimately, the court correctly found that the child's interest in safety and security with a safe and sober parent is the most important factor here today that outweighs all the others. And again, this testimony of the appellant LLH, where she's talking about her child and how badly her child wants to come home, in her response to her child saying, we're working on it every day, baby. We're trying. When in reality, the trial court found she hasn't even acknowledged her addiction issues. She hasn't been receiving treatment, and that the child's best interest is not served by waiting for an indefinite period of time, by waiting for nights and days. And the trial court made the determination that the termination was in the child's best interest and was appropriate. So ultimately, the respondent submits the record establishes the trial court correctly addressed the statutory criteria. The findings are supported by substantial evidence, and those findings were not clearly erroneous. And so the respondent respectfully asked the court to confirm or affirm the trial court's ruling in its entirety, that not only did a sufficient factual basis exist, but it was necessary to secure the best interest of the child to have a safe and sober home with a safe and sober caregiver. And respondent, thanks you for your time today. Thank you.
And thank you. Counsel for appellant.
Rebuttal. Thank you. Again, Kevin Wetherill for appellant mother LLH. I want to address a couple of things in rebuttal here. First of all, the timeline here, what's important to understand is how this child, the facts that are in the record about how this child got to the state of Iowa. Counsel is correct that it was under a DOPA form signed by the parents, but the testimony in the record reflects that that was done because the agency informed the family that it would be a short-term temporary situation. And it was done because specifically the agency said that they could not place the child in the state of Iowa. So it was almost in the nature of a bait and switch. They told this family that, hey, you should just agree to let your child go to Iowa and we won't bring you into a CHIPS case. We'll work with you for a period of time and you can reunify. That, we know, didn't happen. The second thing I want to address is what would be different? Well, in this case,
So the case went on for many months. At what point did either parent object to the placement of the child in Iowa?
There is nothing in the record where they object to the placement of the child in Iowa. There were discussions, I believe, that were reflected in the social worker's report testimony about exploring other relatives in Wisconsin on the paternal side near the reservation of the St. Croix Band of Chippewa. But essentially, there were no efforts made to explore those relatives, but that testimony is in the record. But if you're looking for a review hearing where there was an objection made by the parents to the placement in Iowa, that is not there.
Whether it's a review hearing or informally or formally, am I correct that this appeal is the first time that any objection is being made to the placement of the child in Iowa?
There were discussions during the case where the parents were asking to explore relatives on the paternal side in Wisconsin near where they were residing at the time. And I believe that's in the testimony of Ms. Goldman in the record. So no, I don't think this appeal is the first time a parent requested that a relative be explored for the youngest child in Wisconsin. There was also a request made in the record sometime early on in the case for sibling visits. Because remember, we have an older sibling who was placed by the agency in the state of Wisconsin, while the younger sibling was placed in the state of Iowa. Not one time during the course of this case did the agency make an attempt to have a sibling visit. And so what would be different or what didn't they do? They didn't do sibling visits. They made no attempt to do them. They didn't ask the tribe. There was the record talks about an objection that was made to the form of chemical dependency testing and having the parents drive from Wisconsin to Minnesota to swap their sweat patches out. There was an objection made to that. The court ordered the agency to explore testing options nearer where the parents were living on the reservation. The agency never contacted Child Welfare Office at the tribe to find out if they could do testing, but the testimony of the tribal child welfare officer was unequivocal that they could have tested both parents on the reservation for chemical dependency or for chemical testing.
And why does that? I'm trying to get a sense of how, let's assume you're right about all that and a different approach should have been taken. On what basis would we discern in the record any rational link between what should have happened and the result in this case, that father and mother did not take any significant steps to resolve their chemical dependency?
Well, in the testimony of Ms. Haler, she talked about how emotionally damaging it was to her to have her child located an entire state, two states away from her. And I think you're absolutely right. We're in the speculation zone here, right? What would have been different? However, the law requires the agency to provide these services because we don't know what would have been different. If the agency had explored culturally appropriate services for the child, as to in the record with Ms. Lowe, and they had made an effort to have the child visit Wisconsin where his sister was placed, would that have made a difference to the emotional well-being of the parents and maybe caused them to engage more in service planning? I think it would. And if you review the court reports, those discussions were raised between the social worker and the parents. And the parents were constantly asking for more contact with their child because they were limited to driving from Wisconsin to Iowa to go see their child. And no one made an effort to try and make it easier for them to do it. And that's what was a failure here, that the agency just didn't do what they should have done. And whether it was COVID and that prevented it or not, the fact is it didn't happen. And absolutely, it should have happened. We have a young boy who's an Indian and whose cultural ties are important, not only because of the history surrounding his tribe and the treatment of his people, but his own life. He lived on the reservation for many years of his life and was completely torn away from that by the agency. So we'd ask that you reverse and remand for further proceedings. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And thank you to all counsel for your written submission and for your oral argument today. Very helpful. We appreciate it. The matter is submitted and taken under advisement. We'll issue our opinion within the statutory period. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.